Hello and welcome to this July 24th edition of the World Soccer Talk podcast. I'm your host, Nipun Chopra. Thanks for joining us. Today we will spend the entirety of the podcast discussing the transfer window so far for the Premier League teams. We'll go through each team, tell you who they have signed and let go, and which of these signings we think is crucial so far. In order to help me do this, I'm joined by Robert Hay Jr. and Gabe Smith. Gentlemen, welcome to the podcast. Now, before we get into the meat of things, a quick correction from last week. And this comes from our listener, David Decay. I hope I didn't butcher your name, David. But he correctly pointed out that our information for AC Milan was 1 year out of date. And the entirety of that blame goes on me because I happened to look up the wrong year for the transfer. And without going into a whole thing about why I made that mistake, the fault is mine, not Karthik's. So let me go ahead and update us really quickly on the AC Milan situation. And what has happened so far is they've signed striker Gianluca Lapadula from Pescara and left back Vanghioni from River Plate are the only transfers they've had so far. El Shaarawy, Simone Verde, Torres is going back after the loan. All of those players have left along with players like Felipe Mexis, Kevin Prince Boateng, and Alex have left the club with the expiration of their contracts. And Robert, you follow AC Milan, you follow Italian football very closely. Have there been any real developments in the last week in terms of transfers for them?
You know, I haven't been keeping as up to date with AC Milan as some of the other clubs, but I think the big thing right now is figuring out what the ownership situation is and what their financial situation. Mm-hmm. It's funny. I was laughing as you were going through the correction. I mean, to be glib, it didn't make that huge of a difference which year we're talking about transfers because it's a lot of the same results. So there's a lot of figuring out that they have to go on. I know they're trying to spend some money this off season, but this transfer window, I should say. But
what's the situation right now with the ownership? Is Berlusconi finally going to sell the club? What's the update there?
I need to check my most recent update, but there's always that rumor. I think there's always groups that are coming in and offering money, and it's just signing the deal. I have to go back and double check the most recent update.
Yeah, I think it was like Chinese owners that at least rumored to be coming in with that. And I was going to say I think after you listing out that transfer lineup so far for AC Milan, I'm not sure if there's many AC Milan fans that actually want a reminder of their transfer doings so far. And I guess the other one too would be Carlos Bacca, who's been heavily rumored to be on the way out, whether it be with West Ham or another team that might potentially be coming in for him, such as PSG.
Right, absolutely. So guys, let's get started with the Premier League transfers now. We'll start with Bournemouth. And we're using a couple of sites here to get our transfer updates. So these are accurate, I think, until last night. If there were any transfers today, I think we'll miss those, but that's okay. Bournemouth. So the big incoming transfers, Gabe, were Emerson Hinman. The big talking point for me from that guy, American midfielder. He started in the FC Dallas Academy, signed for Fulham. And I think there are two reasons here. First of all, he's a midfielder. He's promising. But I also think that Bournemouth, Jeff Mostyn is a terrific chairman. And I think they really are trying to increase the Bournemouth brand stateside. And I think Emerson Hinman allows them to do that.
Yeah, no, it definitely does. And that's not exactly a position that they were, really strong in. I think there's some decent names. I mean, Harry Arter played decent for them last season. Lewis Cook is a player that's coming in for them that could do a job. So I think there's a great opportunity for Hinman to be able to come in and get playing time, not exclusively with just some of the domestic then cups, then either FA Cup or Capital One. So excellent opportunity there. But as you point out, I think that the biggest thing as you have then Premier League teams, especially those then that's lower in the table there that can be able to expand their brand and their marketplace. You get it now to where it's not just the big teams. They're coming over stateside then for tours, starting to see then a lot more variety than in the type of English clubs then that are coming over for stateside tours. So just an excellent opportunity for them to gain a bigger hold then in the U.S. marketplace.
Yeah, because as you mentioned, they didn't have a lot of depth there, and they also let go of Matt Ritchie to Newcastle United. And Robert, I was very surprised by this because he's been crucial to them for the last 2 seasons. Two seasons ago, when they were in the Championship, he played over 40 games. Last season, he played 36 out of 38 league games, and he's only 26. And I was very surprised that they let him go to Newcastle United.
Yeah, you know, it's one of those things, I guess, where, and I'm unfortunately not as close a follower as Bournemouth as some of the other people you might hear at podcasts. But, you know, I think it is, you know, you have these players that go out of favor with the club or whatever, and when you have changes and players that come in. So there's probably a longer story behind that. But, you know, I think he'll be very good for, we haven't touched on Newcastle or will, but, you know, I think this is a good pickup for them. Certainly some veteran experience there that will help them. One quick note on Hyman. I think for the U.S., I know this isn't the focus of this podcast, but for the U.S. national team setup, I think this is a huge opportunity for him to get some quality playing time, and that will only help Jurgen Klinsmann's team because he is one of those fringy players that I think young fringy players that could come in and make a difference in 2018 and beyond. So for those people who like Americans to go overseas and play, here's an example of a guy who could live up to that stereotype if he plays well.
Yeah.
Gabe.
Yeah. Go ahead.
It was good. Just, yeah, add to that. I think probably the biggest things with Richie is, you know, the incoming of Jordan Ibe, which was for Liverpool fans, I think was a bit surprising to see that kind of price tag, £15 million associated with Jordan. That's including a sell on and buyback clause as well, which usually then decreases the amount of money there with some of the additional incentives set there. So Bournemouth, you can tell, really wanted this type of player, very direct player, good with his feet. Obviously, still has some ceiling potential to go. Didn't have the greatest of seasons, didn't have many opportunities under Klopp then with Liverpool last season. And I think when you look at that, you know, him starting likely then in on one wing has already gotten a preseason goal for Bournemouth so far. You're probably looking at then Max Gradel then on the other side, who was out injured pretty much the entirety of last season. So that's almost going to feel like a new signing for them. So definitely some, you know, some good potential there on both wings. I mean, Gradle's, you know, 28 now, I think, or something in the high 20s at this point. So it's not necessarily to where you're getting him for potential, but there was definitely some expectations for him coming into to last season. So it'll be interesting to see what Bournemouth can do in the wide area. Is definitely going to have some very direct players crossing the ball in next season.
Yeah, I mean, Jordan Ibe was definitely what I'm glad you gave us your thoughts on Jordan Ibe, because I keep thinking to myself that it might have been, I don't know, I feel like it might have been a mistake in terms of how it plays out, because I think he's the most talented Liverpool player to come through, well, not through, but through at least the youth ranks since Raheem Sterling. So kind of sad to see him go, but I think it's probably the right decision all around. Let's move ahead to Arsenal. Robert, we'll start with you. The big incoming transfer so far has been Granit Xhaka from Borussia Mönchengladbach, a player that I think all of us admire. 23 years old, a holding midfielder, and he is crucial to them this season, Robert, because they have let go three central midfielders. Mikel Arteta, Tomas Rosicky, as well as Mathieu Flamini. Three players that you can argue don't deserve a new contract because they're very injury prone. But I think even though they've signed a quality player in Xhaka, I think it still leaves them a little slight in that holding midfielder, defensive midfielder position.
Yeah, I agree that all around. Now, I think one thing that you lose out on when you lose Arteta, Rosicky, more of those two than Flamini, is a little bit of leadership with this club. But you don't necessarily want to pay top dollar for leadership when the physical element isn't there. So I think in terms of actual play, this is a great move. I think Xhaka's going to bring an added element to this to central midfield playing. I guess if Wenger still sticks with kind of that center midfield pairing there, I think he'll fit in just very nicely. But this brings up a bigger question about Arsenal that I think has to be asked every year. At least in recent years, it seems like Arsenal will go out.
Here we go. Again, come on. The season hasn't even started. Come on, Robert.
Oh no, no, I won't be too negative yet. But no, I think this brings up an interesting point where in the past couple of years, you know, Arsenal is willing to go in for one, maybe two top dollar signings, and then fills in the rest with some bargains. And you've already started seeing some of that in, play out in the press a little bit, where you have Ezekiel come out and say, you know, we like this squad that we have, and Wenger come out and say, well, we've got the money to spend. And so the interesting question to follow up with that is that, you know, yes, Zaka is great. I think he'll be great for this club. I think he'll be, you know, makes for some great pairings in the midfield. But is he going to be the top dollar signing this offseason? And if so, or this transfer window, excuse me. If so, what does that mean for Arsenal? So good first step. But I think there has to be a couple of other steps, including maybe more of a traditional defensive midfielder, you know, another forward and definitely another center back.
I'm glad you said that, Robert, because I'm going to stick with you on this, because I feel as though Arsenal fans do not appreciate that central, that holding midfielder role. and I'll tell you why. So when Spurs bought Wanyama on the cheap, 15 million, which is, or 13 million, which is, when you're talking about the money that's being thrown around these days, that crazy. Is crazy cheap. I do not understand why Arsenal, did not try for Victor Wanyama. He's been linked to them before. He's exactly the kind of player that they need. Somebody who's combative, somebody who will, might not give you a 50 yard pass, but he'll give you the tackles, the work rate, the kind of positions that, Arsenal really need. I mean, someone like Gilberto Silva. Arsenal fans salivate on the memories of Gilberto Silva, but Gilberto Silva wasn't amazing because of his passing. It was his work rate. It was his leadership. So I don't understand why they wouldn't move for someone like Wanyama.
Yeah, you know, maybe it's just I'm not that bright of an Arsenal fan. That's a distinct possibility. But I think it could be a couple of things. I think first of all is that the market, well, it's not even the market, as you mentioned, for what Wanyama went for. But I think Arsenal's brain trust has this love of going for uncovering that diamond. Mm-hmm. And they're willing to go out and get those technically proficient players, the Ozils, Zakas, and people like that for that more top dollar, even though you could argue they even get them at a slight discount. But for someone who's a little less technically skilled, I don't think they want to pay, you know, a ton of money or even, you know, even really go in and spend a lot of money on that. The closest thing they have now is Coquelin, who they developed for the most part, you know, recently internally. Yeah. But it just doesn't seem like they want to get those gritty players. I mean, you could probably argue the same thing about center back, although not as much with you know what they have there. But still, they're not paying top dollar for these less technically proficient players. And I think that's a mentality and that's a tactical decision the club has made that, as we've seen play out on the field, has hurt them at times, especially when Arsenal will bunker down a little bit more, play a little bit more counterattacking than they had in the past against some of the bigger clubs. So, we'll see what they do in this transfer window, but I have a feeling we're going to be seeing a little bit more of the same. So hopefully they buy a lot of skilled players to make up for it.
With Burnley, there isn't a lot to discuss, guys. Johan Berg Gudmundsson is probably the big signing they've made. Our listeners will know or at least recognize him now. He started his career in Iceland, moved to Chelsea, most recently at Charlton Athletic, and just signed for Burnley. He's one of the players that started every game for the Icelandic national team this Euro. So it'll be good to see him playing as a winger at Burnley. And the most important exit from that club is Joey Barton, mostly because we won't get to see his tweets about Burnley. So that's really the only thing to say there. Gabe, let's talk about Chelsea. The biggest incoming, I guess, person here is Antonio Conte, coming on the back of an exceptional performance with the Italian team. You know, he made that team overachieve. The question I have, and you know, we'll talk about it all season, but really quickly, at this point, do you think that with Conte, it's going to be one of those things that he completely rearranges this squad, or are we going to see a slow build up from the, you know, maybe from the ground up, because his tactical system is very complicated and requires a lot of work on the training pitch.
Yeah,
much like Klopp, actually. Yeah.
Yeah, I think it's a great question, and it's one that certainly I think that the jury's going to be out on. I think there's certainly some things that we can look for as indications. I mean, let's start off by noting that I don't think that what Conte is going to be bringing into this is going to be a drastic departure from what Jose Mourinho was lining up in seasons past and the way the team was built. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's not like it's going from a tiki-taka possession-based style, to then a more defensively solid counterattacking team, right? So there's some parallels already there. So I think that certainly is an advantage that Conte can have going into it. One of the other things that I think is important to kind of factor in is just the way that looking at Conte in the past with Juventus, we were so commonly seeing then a three center back setup, and I think that's going to be where I'm curious the most. It could definitely take advantage of some players that are even coming back. One of them coming back on loan or from loan then would be Juan Cuadrado, which I can see really doing well in a wingback type position then if you did have a three center back setup. But the way that Chelsea has handled their transfer market thus far, haven't seen a whole bunch of center backs, being linked with it. I'm not sure if they would have enough depth here, looking at a very old John Terry, can somewhat be inconsistent Gary Cahill. You've got Kurt Zouma coming back then from an injury, a pretty significant injury. You're going to have to kind of see how he does on that. So the signs right now don't necessarily point to Conte doing a three center back system, because I just don't see the depth there. And I think the other interesting thing is that there's going to be some parallels. You have to, when you're talking about Chelsea's offseason and transfer dealings, you have to talk about the elephant in the room, which is their loan system.
Hmm.
As well, so many players out and loan to different countries. You have such an influx right now of people who spent then this past season out and loan coming back. I mean, the likes of Christian Atsu, Marco van Ginkel. There's some players that have done well, but just haven't really been able to get that chance within the Chelsea setup. It's interesting if there's one other team that is known for their loan system and loaning out about as many players as Chelsea, it was Juventus. Mm. So I think that you have that with Conte coming in. He's very, very used to that idea of having players develop in other countries, which is a departure from some managers. You were talking about Klopp before, who likes to keep players in-house, some of the academy players. So I don't think that there's that many drastic, changes then that Conte is going to come in. He's obviously going to put his own fingerprint on this team, and I think it's going to be great in terms of some of his man management that might have been some of the weaknesses then with Mourinho when you get into a couple seasons with the same squad. So I think you're definitely going to see an uptick. But thus far, just with the transfer dealings, I think Conte is a great signing. N'Golo Kanté then from Leicester City, and I'm a big fan of Michy Batshuayi as well. Coming over from Marseille, that I think is going to give him some bites in attack, and could definitely be a great striker for them in a couple years.
Yeah, I noticed that you didn't mention Matt Miazga. Shame on you when you were talking about the back three. How dare you?
There you go. Shun me all you like.
Robert, along with the brilliant signing, which is N'Golo, this is really the season for two Contes at Chelsea. The N'Golo Kanté signing, yeah. I think I see him and Fabregas becoming arguably the best center midfield duo in Premier League this season. I think there's a lot of balance there, but they're also being linked with an exit for Diego Costa and the possible signing of about 60, 70 million of Romelu Lukaku. So your thoughts on those players?
Yeah, I mean, Lukaku is a tantalizing talent. I think that it certainly makes sense for Chelsea to dip their toe in there and see what they can pay for him. I think your thought on the N'Golo Kanté-Fabregas partnership is very intriguing. I think that will have more to see what Fabregas does after a couple of down seasons. I think Kanté will excel in this system, and I think Fabregas could if physically, he's still the player he was a few years ago. So I think that, but this, I'm going to kind of piggyback off of Gabe's point, because I think he made them very well. What we'll see over this transfer window and maybe the January one is Antonio Conte kind of adjust his tactics to some of the players he has. Obviously, he's made some signings. He'll continue to make some signings, Lukaku possibly. But what you've seen in his past in Italy is adjusting initially to what he has and then tinkering in a short time period, a transfer window or two, to put a system in place. So I think, you know, I wouldn't be surprised to see Lukaku come in. Diego Costa going out wouldn't surprise me either. I know they're saying nice things right now, but I mean, that's almost an untenable situation in a lot of ways. But I think you'll see a couple more signings, maybe one or two more big signings. You'll see a Chelsea team system that kind of adjusts to what he has. And then when we're talking at this point next year, we'll start to see what his system for Chelsea, the vision for Chelsea, becoming realized through his signings.
Absolutely. So before we go to Crystal Palace, let me tell our listeners about our sponsor, SeatGeek. Buying tickets online for sports and concerts has been a confusing process for a long time. It's always been hard to find the best deals for that game or that show you really want to go to, and none of those older tickets sites want to change that. But SeatGeek is different. They've come along and created an amazing app and website that makes it easier than ever for fans to buy and sell tickets. SeatGeek is always the first place I go to look for tickets to a game or concert. And it's the same as my co-host. I know my buddy Gabe looked for tickets for the St. Louis game against Roma on August 1st or 2nd, Gabe?
August 1st.
August 1st in St. Louis. So I know he used the SeatGeek app. And Robert, why don't you tell us about your recent experience with SeatGeek?
Yeah, unfortunately, none of the really cool international competitions are coming to DC for a number of reasons that aggravate me, but I am usually in the market for baseball tickets. And recently I was able to take my daughter to her first Baltimore Orioles game thanks to SeatGeek. I had got great seats in left field using the app, and it was couldn't have been easier to purchase the tickets and then use them to get into the stadium all through the app. Very seamless process, and plenty of emails from SeatGeek to explain to me what was going on. So convert definitely with my sports tickets.
Yeah, so you can see that SeatGeek is something that you should be downloading. And best of all, our listeners, World Soccer Talk listeners, get a $20 rebate off their first SeatGeek purchase. To get your $20 rebate on tickets, step one, you download the SeatGeek app. Step two, you go to the settings tab and click add a promo code. Step three, you enter promo code WSTPOD. And step four, SeatGeek will send you $20 after you've made your first ticket purchase. So go ahead and download the SeatGeek app and enter promo code WSTPOD today. Let's go back to the conversation here with Crystal Palace. I think they've had a good transfer summer so far, Gabers. They've signed Andros Townsend from Newcastle, a player that you and I have talked about many times. Quality player, bit inconsistent, but I think he fits the Crystal Palace mold of tricky wingers. We know they have Zaha, Bolasie, players of that ilk. Steven Mandanda, the goalkeeper, I think they're going to get rid of one of either Speroni or Wayne Hennessy because that's the third goalkeeper. James Tompkins has signed from West Ham United. But the big talking point, Gabe, other than those guys, is the fact that they've let go of Adebayor, Shamak, and Dwight Gale, all in the same transfer window, which means they are really struggling for strikers up top. Andros Townsend will not play as a striker, and they'll be linked to Berahino. Your thoughts?
Yeah, it's been interesting, you know, in terms of the summer so far for Crystal Palace and you know, Alan Pardew there. I think that the Steve Mandanda signing is an excellent signing. You know, there was some question marks there with Hennessy inconsistency through the course of the season. I think Mandanda, not only then in terms of his presence between the two sticks, just in terms of his abilities as a goalkeeper, also an excellent leader, has been a captain for Marseille, and you know, again, the leader out of the back for several years now. So certainly will bring that kind of experience and expertise to Crystal Palace. I think that's definitely a great signing by Crystal Palace then to solidify a little bit more of the back line. But yeah, where do the goals come from? I think is really going to be the interesting question here. The way that Crystal Palace is setting up, I mean, they have so much depth at the wing position. Already mentioned there, but, you know, Townsend coming in, Zaha. Don't forget they have Jason Puncheon as well already on the squad. Bakary Sakho is a decent player coming in then for them. That's going to, again, there are a lot of options that, that Purdue now has at the wing area with obviously Bolasie included. I don't see really, you know, Bolasie converting into kind of a central striker, or if Purdue does that, I think that would be a an attempt that's going to have some issues there. So you really do have to look at it. I mean, I don't see Connor Wickham or Frazier Campbell being the answer for you know, for the long term through the season. So you have heard a couple names then linked with Crystal Palace. There was an initial bid then for Christian Benteke that Crystal Palace put in. Liverpool rejected it, trying to get then close to the same amount of money as what they gave then Aston Villa the season before, which is being rumored around $32 million. And it was discussed that Crystal Palace threw in an initial bid of $27 million. So if there's a $5 million gap, and again, it comes to where the striker options start becoming limited, I would not be surprised to see Crystal Palace going back for that, especially again with the way that they're setting up a tall, physical, imposing striker than in the box. Could be their best fit, but as you had noted then in your pre-speech there before going to me, the other big name that has been mentioned is Berahino, which I'm not sure how many transfer windows we're going to go through to where Berahino is just kind of sitting there waiting for anyone to come in for him at this point in time.
And when you say sitting there, you mean in his car outside the training ground,
literally driving around England, just trying to get into somebody's park for a medical. It's been an interesting story. I'm feeling pretty bad for him at this point in time. I think that he probably did have some things that were probably not ideal in terms of how to deal with your current team and you know, taking on the admiration of some others and looking into that. I think he's paid his dues. He's pretty much been sent to the bench through this past season. Has obviously really really decreased his value. Through there, I'm not sure if I see the wisdom in what West Brom's been how they've been handling this whole entire saga. If you're not going to play the player, some kind of money, he did have some great value associated with him. Like I said, I think that's definitely been decreasing as he's been sitting on the bench. But that could be another interesting fit for Crystal Palace point. But you have to say that with the options they have right now, the sole focus for the remaining then transfer window has to be at that striker position.
Definitely. Robert, let's talk about Everton. They haven't really signed too many players. Martin Stecklenburg from Fulham is obviously the focus here, since with Timmy Howard having gone to Colorado Rapids, they were always going to sign a new goalkeeper. But the big thing to talk about, in my opinion, is Ronald Koeman. Takes over, leaves Southampton to take over from the vacant job that Martinez was fired from. And excellent manager, and this is a real test, because in some ways this club has the potential to make an impact in the Premier League. They have some very good players. And do you think Ronald Koeman is a manager capable of taking them to the heights that maybe they deserve? I think.
Yeah, I think I think one thing it's curious to see with new managers as they come in is how many changes they make. I think the stereotype is a new manager comes in, cleans house, brings in a whole bunch of new players. I don't know if we're seeing that as much in recent transfer windows, but I also wonder if that's a sign that, as you kind of alluded to, Ronald Koeman thinks that this Everton club is in pretty good shape the way it is. Now, there's obviously some players that might be leaving that might get poached, but as it's constructed, is this the kind of team that he can use to advance up the table? And, I think for the past few years, we've talked about the potential of Everton, some of the players they've had, and some of the potential. I think that what we could be seeing is the fact that he's giving almost an endorsement by bringing in so few players so far. Now, Stecklenburg, I want to say, great. I think that's a very good signing. I think that he's a good keeper that needs to, not necessarily starting with his team, but could challenge for starter minutes, no doubt about that. But the other side is maybe Everton doesn't have any money to spend and doesn't want to spend the money. We're back to that situation. So right. I think it'll be curious to see how the rest of this transfer window plays out, to see which of those two realities, or if there's a third reality that comes to play.
Yeah.
Well, that's an interesting point too. With that, because all the talk then on the other side of Merseyside has been Everton fans getting excited with they actually have new ownership, or at least a new majority shareholder.
Right.
So Farhad Mashiri came in, and there was quite a bit of discussions of some money being thrown. I mean, thus far, you know, who knows in terms of paper talk? I mean, they've been linked with several different players, decent price tags. Axel Witsel, then playing in Russia currently, has been one of the main players that I've heard, you know, being linked with Everton quite a bit through this window. It may even be to where it's not necessarily looking at then the incomings that's the main focus, but probably the outgoings, mm-hmm. as we already kind of talked about with Lukaku being one mentioned, and of course then John Stones is probably the other player then, besides Barkley, that has significant you know, transfer value there for Everton. If they were to be able to keep a hold of all three of those players, that might be then you know, the biggest success then that Koeman could have going into this the beginning of this new season.
Yeah, interestingly, we're basically officially seeing the end of the David Moyes era, because some of the stalwarts from his time, Steven Pienaar, Leon Osman, Tony Hibbert, and Tim Howard, have left the club in the same transfer window. I think maybe their left back is probably the only one that has survived that era where they were doing pretty well. Let's talk about Hull City. Robert, I'll come back to you here. With Hull City, the big talking point, I think, is the manager. Is the fact that they have just lost their manager
manager?
Yeah, exactly. that they don't have a manager. And for now, from what I understand, Mike Phelan is running things at the club. Manchester United ex-assistant manager at Manchester United. And the fans are up in arms with the fact that Steve Bruce has left the club. There has been widespread mistrust of the Alam brothers' ownership. I was just watching video of that at a friendly that they just played. So this is about the worst start to being promoted as a club could really have.
Yeah, absolutely. Usually your manager doesn't walk off the job for no reason. You know, I joked actually with Cardick on Twitter. It's like, well, Bruce will be the surprise hire for the England manager job. And then when that didn't come to fruition, mm-hmm. you know, it just adds to this mystery. I was kidding, by the way. I know he wasn't going to be hired by England. Really, it's going to be hard to see what composition this team takes. When you're promoted, usually the goal is to spend the money you had and you've made with the promotion to shore up some places to remain in the Premier League. And obviously you can do that with a caretaker manager. The weaknesses for some of this for the club is fairly apparent. There's some players that they could probably bring on to shore up things. Probably striker would be a good place to start. But your manager, even in this era of kind of where the manager is no longer be all and end all, is still kind of the influence of how this team's going to play. And when you have a club that's needs some guidance in terms of structure, how they're going to survive, you know, how they're going to stay up kind of thing. You've got, you know, less than a month until the season starts or maybe right around a month until the season starts. And you don't have that strategic vision in place. So I think this is very worrying for Hull City. If you're a Hull City fan, I'd be very concerned. But you know what? Maybe they'll prove us all wrong, sign a whole bunch of really good players, stay up and continue to build. But they would behoove them to make a good hire quickly, even if it's right. Keeping failing, but they should really be finishing this up pretty quickly if they want to keep the fans on their side.
Yeah. Gabe, some of the players that they could move for is, I just went through the list of available players on a free transfer along with people like Colt Ture. There's some quality there. Dimitar Berbatov is available for a free transfer. Thomas Rosicky, as we mentioned, Kevin Prince Boateng, Flamini Adebayor. I mean, if Hull City moves for at least one or two of those players, I mean, they could be doing a lot worse than some of those players.
Yeah, no, definitely. I mean, and at this point in time, I think with the influx of money, all the TV deals and everything that's coming to the Premier League, you have to keep on pace than, you know, with the clubs around you that, you know, essentially are going to be fighting for that spot. Hull City has to know that right now they're going to be having to fight at the very best then to stay above the relegation zone going into the season. That's going to be the primary objective, especially with the kind of transition they're doing right now and the manager position. So looking at that, they've got a lot of ground to cover. I think that their squad, as it currently is pretty light. They definitely have some holes then through the squad. I think specifically have to look then at the striker position for sure. I think that you know, Abel Hernandez was a player that I thought from Uruguay had some real potential. He's now 25 years of age, hasn't really come through in the way that some people were hoping or expecting to, and outside of him there really isn't much presence for Hull City in the striker position, so that has to be a big area of concern. I think for the most part that they're pretty solid in midfield. I mean, the likes then of Tom Huddlestone, Jake Livermore, El Mohammadi, and Robert Snodgrass, I think that's something to build with. And then you look then at their defense. They've got then a great young player in Andrew Robertson at left back. You got then some nice experience there with Michael Dawson, but that center back position is another one that looks pretty glaring to me. So yeah, Hull City, if they're not careful, they can find themselves then as one of the early season predictions for going back down again, and could definitely benefit from making a couple free transfers just to get some greater depth and some people with some Premier League experience into the squad.
Yeah, as you were rattling off those names, Gabe, I was struck by the fact that a lot of those players were playing at Hull City two seasons ago when they were in the Premier League before they went down. So I think one of the great successes of Steve Bruce's era was convincing those players to stay and convincing them to fight. And it makes me even more sad about the fact that he has had to walk away from the club, reportedly because of issues with transfer spending. Gabe, yeah. We are going to skip Leicester City because we talked about them last week and there have not been any real signings since then. Let's talk about your beloved Liverpool. Since last week where we talked about Mane, where Karthik and I talked about Mane and Joel Matip and etc., Liverpool signed Ragnar Klavan as well as Wijnaldum. So talk to me about how you see those two players fitting into the Liverpool system, as well as an overarching theme, which I think should be appreciated, which is that while the bigger clubs, that's very unfair. While the clubs that are, there might have been a jab in there, Gabe, an accidental jab.
Maybe, yeah. Possibly.
while other clubs are spending a lot more money, Liverpool's manager is getting players that he thinks fits his team mentality.
Yeah, yeah, you know, it's just a different time now with you know, the being able to associate kind of a fair market value on players with this influx of cash. It's not that Liverpool isn't spending money. I mean, you have then the likes of Sadio Mane, then, you know, for, you know, 30 million plus, for Wijnaldum, then for 25 million plus. It's just that probably a couple seasons ago you would think or associate then those type of players with maybe then price tags in the teens, you know, not then 25 to 35 million. So it's just a different era in terms of the transfer spending. As a Liverpool fan, I am pretty happy with some of the dealings. Again, it's not going to have some of that sexy appeal that I think some other clubs are doing with likes of, you know, Gundogan coming in or Abramovich, some of those players then that just have world around appeal. Some of the players, though, I think are fitting in a specific type of setup then that Jurgen Klopp wants. This was a squad that was really lacking. I think a couple things, one being midfield goals, and you have then the likes of Sadio Mane and Wijnaldum were both two players then 10 plus goals were in the top six then of goals then coming from midfielders in the EPL last season. So you're adding goals in there. You also then had a team that really didn't have much pace and didn't have much power coming from those midfield areas as well. And I think that's getting addressed again in terms of some of the kind of physical presence, whether it be then for set pieces and the likes then of bringing in a player like Joel Matip then, who definitely brings in a physical presence there inside the box for those kind of situations. And then addressing then some of the experience in the back line, which You know, certainly when we're looking at last season and you're looking at the likes then of Colo-Touré, you know, this was not the same player that was, you know, the exceptional defender for Arsenal. This was a player who, you know, knew tactically where he needed to be, was great in his positioning. Certainly, though, his most athletic years were behind him. But him moving on, I think you definitely had a void in that kind of defensive experience and just someone who can come in and bring some presence there. I think that the Ragnar Klavan move was specifically for that. Also have a little bit extra benefit that Klavan then is also used to playing left back. So you get a little bit some depth in that position. I think overall, when I'm looking at Liverpool's window thus far, again, I think it's addressing the areas that Klopp wanted. Again, also noting goalkeeper there with Loris Karius that we haven't mentioned before. But I think probably the biggest thing that you're still going to look for over the next month and a week is going to be fullback depth with the talks then of
I heard Moreno didn't have a good game again.
Mourinho. There's definitely a lot of Liverpool fans who are already on the outs with Mourinho. I personally, I think that he's still too young of a player to be completely discarding. And I think he's got some things that add to Liverpool's squad. Just certainly need to work on defense. But John Flanagan's rumored to be then on loan. Or looking at an on loan. He didn't even travel with the squad to the U.S. For the International Guinness Champions Cup. But he's being rumored then for a loan with Burnley. And then Brad Smith, which is surprising here, there's talks of a $6 million move from AFC Bournemouth then for Brad Smith, which is shocking in terms of that amount of money. That's way more money than I would have expected for Brad Smith. So if that does take place, Liverpool literally has no depth at the fullback position. I wouldn't be surprised if they go back for a player both at right back and left back before the season begins.
So Robert, while Gabe cries over the loss of Adam Bogdan moving to Wigan. Let's talk about Man City.
My ginger goalie.
Your ginger is gone. Your ginger brother has left you, Gabe. Robert, let's talk about Man City. They have in my opinion, and for other people's, arguably the best manager in the world now in Pep Guardiola. But his tactical system is going to take time to build into that team. But they have signed one of the best players in the world in Ilkay Gundogan, a player that can be a bit injury prone, but when he is fit, he is absolutely an incredible player in his position. So talk to me about what you see, what Pep Guardiola is doing to build this team so far.
First of all, I mean, I can't believe you slated Bruce Arena when you're talking about best manager in the world.
We'll let that slide.
Yeah, it's okay.
Bruce listens to the podcast fairly often. So
we're focusing on Europe today. I think this is another similar situation where you had a very talented squad coming in and a very good, obviously, I agree with you, probably the best manager in the world right now, who's going to be implementing a system that relies on a smart physical play, smart play. Gundogan is, I think, like you said, a perfect fit. I think you can get away with being a little bit of injury prone with a team like a club like Manchester City, who has depth, but I don't think you can overlook, you know, the skill and the ability the ability to come up in big situations. He's that it factor that I think he has and has shown at the club level, and I think increasingly will for on the international level. So I think it's a good signing.
Speaking of the it factor, what do you think is going to happen with Yaya Toure?
That's a good question. I don't know. I'll be honest, I don't know. I think he's in his spurts when he shows that he wants to play and that he wants to be world class. I mean, you can't discard that for, you can't discard that. I think what you have to do, and I'm acting like I'm the best manager in the world here, I think you have to give him, push him, give him some competition. And I think Guardiola is going to do that, bring in some players and rotate him in the squad and see how he responds. And if he turns off, like I think he probably will, then you ship him off to and make a little bit of money on the transfer. But I think he's good enough that you need to at least see if this managerial change will do him some good. Manchester City has the ability to bring in, they have the resources to pay players to challenge, top wage players, so they can do that. But But no, I think this will be a good opportunity. I think Pep Guardiola is going to sit there and he has the resources, as he has everywhere else, to bring in some players to challenge some positions and see what he's got as he begins to implement kind of his system with Manchester City.
Yeah, it's interesting to me because at the start of the summer, two players that I thought would definitely be leaving their clubs based on the managerial hires at their clubs were Toure at City as well as Mata at United. And now it seems like both those players are going to start their seasons with their respective clubs, which is interesting. Gabe, talk to me about a player that Man City is being linked to very heavily, is John Stones. Somehow, even though he had a very poor season, his transfer value actually went up. And the rumored price now is somewhere 55, 58 million, which is insane. But looking past the price itself, do you think John Stones will fill in possibly the loss of the perennially injured Vincent Kompany and some of the other defensive issues at Man City?
Yeah, it is called silly season for a reason, right? I think it certainly you cannot overlook John Stones. And I'm curious in terms of with last season, you know, looking at it and trying to identify why he may have fallen back a little bit. You know, one thing that you can easily go to is wondering if maybe the hype around it, kind of the talk of a potential move out at that point in time, it was strongly linked with Chelsea. If that might have gotten his head early on, and then just some injuries there at some points in the course of the season, just never seemed like he really kicked on through the course of last season. You know, going into that's obviously got to be something that you got to think about and factor in. Now, with the kind of depth that Man City has at the center back position, it would certainly be something to where he doesn't have to be then the savior, you know, in that kind of squad. So that could be quite relieving for him, and it could be an opportunity for him to really grow under, you know, an excellent manager and Pep Guardiola. I don't think there's going to be too many players who would turn down that opportunity. So I think when you look at that and you factor that all in, I think there's definitely, you know, a very good shot that it could happen. You know, Pep loves his ball playing defenders. John Stones right now at this point in time in his career definitely has some great attributes then on the ball to where I think he could bring that, you know, to the lineup. I still also though think that, you know, as far as Guardiola is concerned, you certainly have to be a little bit concerned about Vince Kompany and the constant injuries that take place for him. But in terms of the squad as a whole, you know, there's still some great options there. I mean, Nicolas Otamendi, you know, Mangala. I think there's still some players, some high caliber players that are in there. That if I was Pep, you know, I wouldn't completely discard. And then as a Belgian fan, I'm a big fan of Jason Denier, who was out on loan last season and then to Galatasaray. Did get then a lot of starts there. I'm curious to see what Pep does with him. But Jason Denier could be then that great kind of youth option at 21 years old that he can really kind of help mold and build with. So there might not be a need then to go and splash the cash for John Stones when maybe some other positions, maybe mainly in the midfield area, are a little bit more apparent for Man City at this point.
Is it Denier? I always thought it was Denier. Or was I just trying to sound cool? And it's actually Denier.
I think you were just trying to sound cool.
That sounds like me. I fail miserably at that.
Although, never come to me though for player pronunciations.
That's true.
I'll Americanize any name at this point. So.
All right, let's talk about Man United, Robert, club that Gabe supports. The big talking point, of course, is
don't we all?
Yeah, is the manager Jose Mourinho takes over after Louis van Gaal was let go, was fired, and he outlined four players that he wanted in four positions. Successfully signed Eric Bailly from Villarreal, Zlatan Ibrahimovic, you might have heard of him, as well as Henrik Mkhitaryan from Borussia Dortmund. So three out of four signings have been made. And the first thing I want to ask Robert really quickly is, I mean, I have obviously had the chance to watch the preseason games, but I want to know what you think about how Ibra and Rooney will fit into the system, because somehow it seems to me that one out of the three of Ibra, actually one out of the two out of the four of Ibra, Rooney, Mata, and Rashford could play at any given time, and there are going to be two of them that are constantly going to be left out.
Yeah, it's scary options. I think you're not going to see much from Zlatan change. I think it's more of how does Rooney adjust to the new manager, to his new, to his aging, and to his new role. So I think your my quick answer is it's going to be up to Rooney to see how he adjusts rather than the new guy coming in.
Yeah, he'll probably be in that position just behind the striker, Rooney, because in Mourinho's press conferences, he basically just outlined the fact that he doesn't see Rooney as a holding midfielder, and he doesn't really see him as the main striker. So, in other words, his position is going to be probably just behind the striker. And I worry if that striker is Ibra, because between Rooney and Ibra, I feel like there isn't a lot of mobility. So I'd like to see Rooney maybe match up with someone like Rashford on the regs. So, but the big talking point, Gabe, is that United is being linked with a world record-breaking move for Paul Pogba. And obviously, the amount of money being thrown around is mad. I mean, think about the number of lives you could change with a third of that money. So, you know, all of that is absolutely accurate, and it's crazy that so much money is in football now. But beyond that obvious talking point, do you think Pogba will actually make a big enough impact at Man United?
I think, you know, Paul Pogba is a midfielder that I think you know, you could maybe debate about Real Madrid or Barcelona in terms of week in, week out. But I think any other club, you can easily see him walk straight into midfield. So there's no question that Paul Pogba would add some talent to any squad. Whether or not the ends justify the means is a completely different topic, right? I mean, in terms of the amount of money that we splashed there. And this is something that I thought we saw with United last season. Now, I don't know if there really is, like, you know, a certain finite amount of money that can be spent, and talking about, you know, putting money in one bucket and kind of taking out of the other. But, you know, it seemed like, you know, last year, even, or at least in the past couple seasons, United's really gone for those big name type signings, the likes of a Falcao, the likes of an Angel Di Maria,
bringing that kind of I don't know either of those players, so
bringing that kind of big name presence. And seeing it to where it was a position of need, but maybe not necessarily the best fit for how they were going to implement and they were going to play. But again, you had then, you know, a name that you could throw back on the back of jerseys. It had that market appeal that it was going to be, you know, a great situation for all. Well, you know, it necessarily wasn't. Obviously, we saw with those two. Now, I think this is going to be far different from Pogba in this case, but I think that something to be said is that you have to be a little bit weary with making some of these big name signings and not necessarily be a big fit, and you almost now have just a team of individuals rather than a full team that complements each other. Like I said, all that said, I think the biggest thing is with Pogba is how you play him. We saw with France here in the Euros, I don't think that, especially late on in the tournament there, that you saw then Deschamps playing Pogba in a position that you're going to get the most out of him. And he was playing very far back, and I don't think that you really were able to see his skill set then on the attacking end like you would. So, you know, the question is really going to become how Mourinho plays Pogba, if he's going to give him kind of the free license. And then at that point in time, you know, if you have, I think, some options, as United does, to have someone like either Carrick or Schneiderlin really kind of playing then more of that holding role, giving then Pogba free license to roam around and impact the field of play. I think it can work out, you know, quite well for United. So we'll have to see. But that is certainly an awful lot of money, and you have to wonder if there's maybe some other areas then in United's squad that might need addressing there with probably little bit of resources then to be able to put towards that the remaining window.
Mm-hmm. And can I just jump in with one thing that's impacting that might impact this move is the rumored acquisition of Gonzalo Higuain by Juventus.
Oh. Yeah, except Robert, yeah, 94 million. But I read that sources from Juventus said that money, those, even though they've already spent like 140 odd million, including Higuain, that money is not dependent on the Pogba move.
That's insane.
Which is crazy to me, because if I know FFP is pretty much a non-factor now, but given how much money Juventus has, given the issues Juventus has had previously, maybe not in the last couple of seasons, for them to be able to spend a net 140 million is pretty amazing.
Well, I mean, it's also, though, just real quick, I know we're talking about England here, but just real quick, it's a global brand. I mean, Juventus isn't at the same level as Manchester United, but it is a global brand. And if you can win a Champions League to increase that global brand, then you're paying for it yourself right there when you win the Champions League. So I think that's the thought process.
Having signed Pjanic, I mean, so some might argue with Pjanic and Higuain, they're stronger than if with just Pogba. So I think that it's either way Juventus has done well, even if Pogba leaves. So next talking point, I guess, moving away from Manchester United, is let's talk about Middlesbrough. Robert, I'll come to you with this. Alvaro Negredo is probably the player that stuck out to me the most out of the transfer that have gone in. Maybe Victor Fischer is one that that's worth mentioning as well. Victor Valdes, Manchester United, Barcelona ex-goalkeeper is the other one. So any players that stand out to you for the newly promoted Middlesbrough side?
I think you're right to emphasize Negredo. I think that's a great piece of move by them. And it looks like, you know, with the list of players coming in, you've got some veterans here. For whatever reason, I like Victor Valdes. I don't can't quite explain it. Maybe I overvalue him.
I like Valdes as well. Yeah, he's a good
player. I think he's a good veteran, you know, in goal. And I think that can be invaluable to a team like a Middlesbrough also. You know, I think you've got some good experienced players with a diverse, you know, coming from some diverse clubs. So it looks like Middlesbrough is doing some scouting and bringing in some players that can definitely benefit the club. So, you know, I think they've done some good business here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Gabe, anything to add or should we move?
Yeah, no, I think I've been thoroughly impressed with their summer window so far. Victor Fischer is another player that has been playing in the Dutch league now for several seasons, had a couple injuries that kind of set back his progression. But there's always been quite a bit of attention towards him as a great winger than to come out of Netherlands. We'll see if he can, with a new opportunity, kind of a new lease on life, if he can be able to get back some of the you know, kind of progress then that people were expecting at this point in time. And then also just be, you know, probably look out for them to get another center back. They were pretty much all locked and solid with a deal for Subotic then from Borussia Dortmund before he failed his medical. Yeah,
exactly.
Failed his medical there. And so that now deal is off. I wouldn't
just
surprised.
Had surgery actually. So he's out for a few months.
So he's going to be, I mean, I think even longer than that. It looked like he was going to be out for like half a season. So I think, you know, you're probably seeing to where Middlesbrough was looking specifically for kind of a, you know, a veteran center back, you know, with some top level experience. So again, I think if you're looking for, if you're a Middlesbrough fan, you're probably expecting to see another move of that same kind of ilk.
Yeah. Which makes sense because they let Jonathan Woodgate leave this summer. Jonathan Woodgate from, as he played at Middlesbrough before, Leeds United, Real Madrid, Tottenham. Yeah, he's played all over the place. I mean, at one point, Jonathan Woodgate was considered to be one of the best English defender. And I'm talking at a time where Rio Ferdinand was coming through and John Terry was coming through. So just a very sad, he can claim that he played for Real Madrid. How many English players can claim that? Yeah. But the point is that, you know, his career was very injury struck. Let's talk, Gabe, I'll stick with you for Southampton here. In the yearly sale of players at Southampton, they have already lost Wanyama, Sadio Mane, Graziano Pelé has moved to Chelsea, to China. Gaston Ramirez has left. And they've brought in Nathan Redmond, Horberg, the 20-year-old Bayern Munich player, and Nathan Redmond, who I already mentioned from North City. So, I mean, I guess the big question for me, forget the players, is this the season that Southampton finally capitulates after the fact that they've lost 15 first-teamers in the last 3 years?
Well, you know, I think it's been said like every summer.
That's the thing.
And it never falls off. So you almost start feeling guilty about, you know, going right back to it and, you know, kind of beating a dead horse with it. But I do think that this is probably the summer kind of finally falling off. I mean, as a Liverpool fan, I'm just glad that of all the summer dealings, there was only one player that Liverpool went in from Southampton. It's a bit of a surprise there going against their yearly quota this time around. You know, I think I read
a stat somewhere, and Gabe, I encourage you to fact check me on this. But I think between Newcastle United, Southampton and Sunderland, I think it was.
Aston Villa.
That Liverpool has spent a quarter of a billion, was it dollars or pounds in the last five years.
I think every Premier League fan should be happy that we got Aston Villa relegated personally. Okay. So, send the thank you cards in the mail. No, getting back to Southampton, I think, you have to say kudos to their academy. They've been bringing up some really great players. I think the big thing with Coleman had such a great understanding he definitely was picking some great then Dutch talent. But I mean, his knowledge then of the other leagues, some key players, he was just always just making shrewd moves, in the transfer window, when Southampton needed to restock after teams were going in, for some of their big players. So I'm just not seeing that in the summer window. Don't get me wrong. I think Nathan Redmond, is a good signing, and Hojbjerg as well from Bayern Munich, who didn't really get much of an opportunity. I'm looking forward to seeing him with Southampton. But I mean, I think Wanyama is going to be a huge miss. For them. Yeah. I'm looking then in terms of the goals that are losing then between Sadio Mane and then and Pella, and I'm just kind of curious where that's going to come from at this point in time. I haven't really heard that many other links with players. It's kind of gone a bit quiet as far as I have seen then for Southampton. So I really do think that this is probably the year to where you finally find themselves outside of the top 10. But you can't say enough then about kudos to the club and what they've done over the past several seasons. No one has been hit as hard every single summer with people going out and still retaining space. In fact, usually improving upon their previous year's position. So really an impressive performance then thus far in the past several seasons.
Yeah, Claude Puel, ex Monaco manager, is the one who's taken over with Coleman having left, and he has a serious job to do. So let's talk about Stoke City, Robert. Not much in terms of incoming players. Outgoing players, Peter Odemwingie, Steve Sidwell has moved to Brighton, Hove Albion, and they are being linked with the Welsh Xavi / Pirlo, Joe Allen. And to be fair, Joe Allen had a terrific Euro championship, so would be a good signing, but probably not the area that they really need to improve in, isn't it?
No, it probably isn't, but I mean, with Stoke City, it would just, it would be some talent to come in. Stoke will never probably be the club to watch with transfer dealings. I think they're going to miss Odemwingie. I think he was a nice little veteran presence, but I think bringing Joe Allen in would, I mean, it wouldn't, it's not a game changer to use a sports cliche, but I think it would help with some talent. You see with Stoke, you get what you see. Nothing much to say about that.
Yeah. I'm going to stick with you, Robert, to talk about Sunderland. Within the last couple of days, it has broken that David Moyes is taking over as manager at Sunderland. I have to give big credit to our friend Chris Hennage. He's one of the first people to break this news. With Sam Allardyce having taken the job at England, it's going to be an interesting season for them. They narrowly escaped relegation last year. They're going to be perennially, in the relegation battle. But I believe that David Moyes is probably the best hire so far in terms of the immediate impact he will have on his club of all the teams in the Premier League. And I include Guardiola, Mourinho in that.
When you're talking about pure impact, yes, I agree with you. Immediate impact. Yep. Because I think that I know that the track record of the past two clubs aren't there, but I do think that this is the kind of situation where David Moyes has done well in the past and will do well. I think the big question for Sunderland right now is you're transitioning from two different styles, from Sam Allardyce's style to Moyes' style. Can Moyes use the players that Allardyce has brought in to keep Sunderland up, and can he adjust his tactics and his style of play to these players? I think he could. I mean, again, this is somewhere he's been in this situation in the past. He's done well. So I think he will, but I think that'll be the big adjustment. You've got, this transfer window's closing soon. So unless he's been out scouting players, which is possible, he's not going to have a ton of time to start implementing his vision by signing people, nor probably the cash, relatively speaking. But I think if he can keep this afloat for the next 6 months, start building what he wants to build, make some splashes in the January transfer window, I think this club will be just fine. And I think they couldn't have hired a better manager based on the situation they're in.
Yeah. Gaber's going away from talking about Sunderland to talking about Swansea City, the Gaffer's beloved Swansea City. Leroy Fair. This is basically, with Swansea City, it seems like it's a transfer window where they're trying to bring in players back to the club. Leroy Fair has come from QPR. They're being linked to Joe Allen again and Wolf Boney. They've let go of a couple of strikers and Paloski as well as Eder. And so the focus for them is a striker. And I don't know about how... Maybe it is a good thing, right? Maybe Wolf Boney comes back and gets to the levels he was at when before he moved to City. But I don't know. I don't think he's going to be able to reach those levels again.
Yeah, Swansea City is in a precarious spot at this point in time. They've had in the past couple seasons to where they really make then that one shrewd move that just kind of keeps them, you know, in the hunt for relevancy at that point. I think last year, you know, Andre Ayew was definitely that signing for them. I mean, a free transfer coming over from France. The kind of goals they brought over into this team, it was a great move. I just haven't seen it. I like Leroy Fair a lot. I think that's a good move. Getting him then in that midfield. But I haven't seen that really that same kind of move so far this season. I just don't see the likelihood. Then in terms of looking potential with some of the moves that they might do, I just don't see it happening. I think that they're going to have to be creative, maybe look outside of the English market then for some of their players. You even have also the likes of I've seen even some strong links in with Sigurdsson then potentially being, you know, on the way out. I think that would be a huge blow for Swansea City, not only in terms of their open field play, but he has been a key piece in making Swansea City then a threat on set pieces, whether it be from corners or actual direct free kicks. So if that takes place, I think if you're a Swansea City fan, then you have to be quite worried for the prospects of this season. But striker is definitely a position that they really need to address. I think Bafétimbi Gomis had a good start to the season. It could certainly be, I think, a great option off the bench coming into the late minutes then of a match. And again, being able to be maybe a little bit more direct, trying to get him on a header, use some of his physical presence then in the box. But I just don't see him being then a full, well-rounded striker that you can count on then for a majority of 90 minutes. So you really need to address that. I think you definitely need a player then who's going to be a little bit more mobile, could be able to get the midfielders involved. And I think you're going to have to find someone then, who's probably playing in the Premier League. So hopefully for the Swansea City scouting that they have a couple options in mind of a player that can take them maybe to the next level from what they have been the past couple seasons.
Yeah, Robert, let's a real quick summary of Spurs' summer so far. They've signed Wanyama, as we've mentioned, who's going to give them even more additional depth in an already stacked central midfield area. Victor Janssen from AZ, as well as they're being linked with the Aston Villa 17-year-old Andre Green. So we'll skip Spurs. We'll talk about them when we preview the season in detail in a couple of weeks. Let's talk about Watford here. They have a new manager. And I guess they've had a good summer so far in terms of getting some players in, but not necessarily players that we would consider to be having some exceptional quality.
Yep, I mean, when you look at the list of players coming in, it is there's very little that I guess hits you upside the head and you sit there and nod and go, well, that's a key move to make. I think the big thing is. Their new manager coming in, Walter Mazzarri, who has a lot of experience in Italy, was last seen pacing the sidelines for Inter, where his career ended not so gloriously. But he does have a long.
Really
history
quickly, give us some context of that in a minute or so. How did it play out?
He was a manager during I don't want to say the beginning, but during one of Inter's recent swoons when he was sacked. They were in ninth place in November. So it was just one of those. It was during Inter's, I guess they're still kind of going through it. They're searching what does it all mean phases. he had come from Napoli and had great success at Napoli. And So he has a long, this is my way of saying, he has a long track record in Italy. And I think Watford looked at what Chelsea did and said, hey, let's bring in someone who's been a manager in Italy successfully for a long time and see what they can do in the Premier League. I think he's a good manager, but kind of like the players, he's not a kind of person that makes you nod and go, this is the key. This is it's going to bring them success. So a lot of questions for Watford. I think they could be the kind of team that could do surprise somewhat and, you know, finish top half, but they could also, you know, remain top half, but also could not do quite so well.
Yeah. If they start the way they did last season, they'll be in top five until Christmas and then fall away. So let's talk about West Brom, Gabe. Again, not much to talk about. Matt Phillips is from QPR has come in. They released Anichibi, Sessegnon, as well as ex-Man United goalkeeper Lindegaard. Not much to talk about. Probably the big talking point will be whether or not Berahino stays.
Yeah, I think that's it. I mean, at this point in time, you have to say that, you know, if you're looking at West Brom, I unless Tony Pulis has some tricks up his sleeve here, it's going to be a pretty light window for them. And it's a bit surprising because I think that there's definitely it's definitely a squad that could have been improved upon. So I'm curious to see how they fare up. But if you're looking at, I think, of the clubs then that have that aren't just recently promoted, you got to say that they're ones and that you can put then in kind of that relegation scrap, just from the fact that you have so many other teams around them that are improving on their squad, bringing in experience, bringing in some new youth, and right now West Brom's transfer window has been pretty stale.
Yeah. Let's finally talk about West Ham United, Robert. They've signed a few players. Havard Nordveit, a player that Gabe salivated over for a little bit from Borussia Mönchengladbach. At least you did on the ULF podcast. I don't think you talked about
him. No. I mean, he's a decent player, but yeah. The drool is still in my mouth, but
that's,
at the end of
that's
the
day, right. I can hear it dropping over the mic. Gökhan Töre from Besiktas. They've signed a couple of other young players. So, again, not a lot of players that would stick out to us, but I think Gökhan Töre, the forward from Besiktas, is probably coming in on loan, is probably the one that West Ham fans will be looking at to make the most impact.
Agreed. I think he's going to be the one that can make the biggest impact, and I think it's a good piece of business by them. Although I'm gonna agree with Gabe on this one with Nordby. I think that he's the kind of player that could do well in the Premier League. Let me put it this way: could do better in the Premier League than he did the last time around. I think. Fun fact: he was kind of Michael Bradley's replacement in Germany for his club team. Wow. But I think that he could do. He could do pretty well, I think, with West Ham, and I think that's a good piece of business by them.
Excellent. So, gentlemen, we will be back, and listeners, we will be back next week. We will be talking briefly about the Olympics, the soccer part of the Olympics, not diving, which I
don't know.
Gabe is hitting unsubscribe, obviously. So we'll talk about the soccer part of the Olympics briefly, and we'll update you on more transfer stuff. And then a week from next week, well, I guess 2 weeks from now, we will be getting into previews for the Premier League season, which is crazy. This summer has flown by, and it's been lots of fun doing podcasts with you. So until that moment, on behalf of everyone at World Soccer Talk, on behalf of Gabe Smith and Robert Hay, this is Nipun Chopra asking you to enjoy your football.